Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's December 9, 2011, and this is episode 312. Today, I'm joined by Clive Copeman, an amazing photographer based in New Zealand, who I've teamed up with to bring you our Southern New Zealand photo adventure. Welcome to the show, Clive.
Thanks, Martin. Good to be here.
It's great to have you on. We've been speaking quite a lot as we prepared the for the tour, and once again, just to publicly thank you for all of the work you've done on the preparation. You've put a great itinerary together for us.
Oh, you're welcome. You'll know it's been a labour of love. I'm really looking forward to this tour.
Yeah. So as we put the page together, I was looking at your images from the locations that we go into, and all of we've got a lot. We're going to go through this, as we chat here, but we've got so much packed into this tour that I really hope that we can, we get enough people sign up to make it happen, because those of you that do come with us are going to have a really good time.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great adventure.
Me too. So let's tell you what. Before we jump into the talking about the tour itself, tell us a little bit about Clive Copeman, the photographer.
Okay, well, that's a short story, so I'll begin with a bit of backstory. I was very heavily influenced by the series Life on Earth. Did you ever see that David Attenborough series?
I did, yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah, I saw that when I was about 17, and that was at the time when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Mm. And after seeing that, I decided I wanted to be a wildlife filmmaker.
Got you.
So I studied zoology at university, came out and joined the New Zealand version of the Natural History Film Unit.
Got you.
And ended up making science programs for many years, mainly as a script writer.
Yeah.
And however, I always felt that I'd been neglecting the visual side of my storytelling.
Yeah.
So a few years ago, I just decided I really needed to strengthen my visual skills and decided to reinvent myself as a photographer.
Wow.
And so, yeah, for the last 2 or 3 years, I've just been making it as a commercial photographer.
That's amazing. That's a pretty cool story. A big leap there as well. So
it was. It was a bit of a leap of faith. As you know, it can be scary, changing into the photography line of work all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've got a very understanding wife who also works hard to support me.
Yeah, me too. It makes a lot of difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So what were you going to say, Clive? Sorry.
That's brought me almost full circle after doing, a few years commercial photography now. I'm sort of getting back into my wildlife stuff, only this time behind the camera instead of writing scripts.
Got you.
And it's brought me back to my stomping ground, this tour has, because I grew up in this region, southern New Zealand.
Okay.
And that's, it's made me the person I am, and it makes Kiwis what they are. The great outdoors is our psychic backyard.
Yeah. My brother used to be in the army. He was in the army for 20 years, and one of his favorite places to go was New Zealand. He almost emigrated there, but didn't work out. But yeah, he loves it over there. And I've seen a lot of imagery from your part of the world, and it's one of the tours that I've been working on it's the first one that we've added in addition to my Japan tours. So it shows how much I want to go down there and see your beautiful part of the world. So let's jump into it and start to talk a little bit about what we're going to do each day.
All right.
But what I wanted to say is to the listeners, I've created a quick short link. So if you're not listening in iTunes or on my blog where you'll see the images, you can also jump to mbp.ac/nznz for New Zealand 2012. And that will take you to the tour page, and you can follow along the days, the text and some photos that we'll talk about as well. But so to set the scene here, the tour itself starts on, April 15th, 2012. It's not far out. And it runs until the 27th. And the plan is, because, the domestic travel in New Zealand, especially as most people will be traveling in from outside of New Zealand, because it's going to take a little bit of sorting out and it can be expensive. We've included a flight from Auckland down to Dunedin. Actually, where do we fly into? We don't fly into Dunedin, right?
Most people, if you're coming from overseas, will fly into Auckland or Christchurch.
Right. Okay. So,
but I would expect most people to arrive in Auckland.
Yeah. So that's on the evening of the 15th of April. And so we'll all fly down to the southern part of New Zealand to get started from Auckland. And there is a refund. We'll refund that domestic flight if you happen to be in Dunedin and the southern part of New Zealand already. But we'll we can work all of that out if you book and you are going to make your way down there yourself. But basically, we're going to get started on April 15th in the evening and have a dinner together with Clive and I, and then really that kicks off the trip. And so on the following morning, we fly down to Dunedin together. And what's going to happen after that, Clive?
Well, the first thing we do when we get to Dunedin is head straight out to my backyard, Otago Peninsula. Mm. It's a beautiful part of the world, but it's also a real hotspot for wildlife. We've got cormorants on the coast here, the only mainland colony of royal albatross, and we'll be able to get up close to the birds as well as on the nest and see them in flight.
Yeah.
We've got fur seals on the coast here. We've got Hooker's sea lions, which are just a wonderful beast. We've also got the world's rarest penguin, the hoiho or yellow-eyed penguin here. Nice. And we'll do all that on the first day.
So people are going to be launched straight into it here. It's going to be amazing to just get stuck in straight. And this is also part of the reason why we want to help you to get down there on time, you know, because if you miss your domestic flight, then it'll mess up your experience a little bit. So I think that the way you've organized this is really, really good, Clive.
Well, the amazing thing about this part of the world, Martin, is that you're not sitting for 3 or 4 days waiting to see the wildlife that we're talking about. It's Dunedin's becoming a very popular spot to see these things because they are there. You drive up and you see these things. It's a pretty good spot.
What was that? The thing is, you've just been awarded some. Was it the 100 or 1,000? Places to visit, or what? There was something you were emailing me about earlier this week.
Yeah, every now and then, I think it's Lonely Planet comes up with their top 1,000 places to visit or top 100.
Yeah.
And I think at least 4 of the spots on our itinerary are named.
Excellent.
Some of the places we're going are the World Heritage areas. And really, they are held up as the kind of places if you're into wildlife, scenery, or photographing either of them, then you really want to come and see them.
Excellent. So on the second day, what happens there? We go down for a walk around the village or the city, and see the Victorian
city.
Yeah.
Yep. Dunedin's a city of about 100,000 people.
That's substantial.
It's not bad. It's a university town, so it's very it's not overly industrial or metropolitan. But I like it. It's a good size. I think a city that's just the size that you can walk across in a day is a very human sized city, and that's Dunedin.
Nice.
So for those who are keen, we'll be having a city walk because we've got some fantastic Victorian architecture here in Dunedin that I think anyone who's interested in architectural photography will love. Mm. And if you're finding yourself a little bit jet lagged, because I know it is a long way to come, that's also an opportunity to rest if you don't fancy the city walk.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll poll the team probably the night before or maybe at breakfast on that day. But we've got an option that if there are people that want to stay back at the hotel, then I'll hang back with you. If people are interested, we can do a colour management seminar. We're going to make sure that we cater for everybody. I think that everyone's going to want to just get out into the city. Come all this way just to spend time in a hotel is probably not the best thing. But if that's how you, you know, like Clive says, if you're jet lagged and you're all messed up and you just can't face a walk, then we'll arrange something to keep you busy, so that you don't just go back to sleep and make your jet lag even worse.
It's a beautiful city to walk around. I'm sure everyone will enjoy it. I don't think many people will take the hotel option.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping nobody does so that I can get out there as well. okay, so on day three, we're going to go to some landscape locations at the end of day two as well, after the city walk.
That's right. We'll go back out to the peninsula and just take our time and get some nice landscape pictures. We're on the sort of southeast coast of New Zealand here, and the peninsula is rugged. It's full of basalt boulders, beautiful rocky beaches, and some just stunning locations for landscapes. So I'm going to take people to maybe two or three of my favorite spots. One of them's a beautiful old abandoned farmhouse that sits in a valley by this ocean inlet. And if conditions are good, it's just stunning. And if conditions are bad, it's still stunning.
I actually prefer inclement conditions for most of my photography. So I'm totally in line there with you.
Yeah, I like drama in my landscapes. And golden hour is lovely. And if you can nail a good golden hour shot, then brilliant. But nice sunny days can be pretty boring from a photography point of view.
Yeah, high contrast as well. So,
yeah.
So sounds great. On day three, at dawn, we're going to be out to one of the highlights of the landscape related highlights of the tour. Tell us about that.
We'll be driving up the coast for about an hour to a little fishing village called Moraki. And on the beach there, there are these almost perfectly spherical boulders, the Moraki boulders. And there are some Maori legends about how they came into being. There's also a scientific explanation of how they got to be there, which I'll share with everyone. But they're just the most fascinating rocks on this beach, and it is one of the top photographic locations in New Zealand. I've been there at dawn several occasions, and there's been a line of photographers there every time.
Yeah. So I think that if these were man-made, they'd be something to avoid. But because people try to not include man-made objects in the scene. I mean, obviously, architecture and stuff like that's different. But because these are naturally formed, it makes them so fascinating, and I can't wait to photograph these.
Oh, they're beautiful. And, I hope we do get a really colourful dawn.
Yeah.
Because they'll just be stunning. And no matter what the tide, sometimes they're poking out of a little bit of water. Sometimes they'll be well up the beach. No matter what the conditions, they're really dramatic and really intriguing. They're fascinating objects.
Absolutely. So I can't wait to go and see these guys. So what's on after that?
Drive back down to Dunedin, and then we're going to explore Otago Peninsula from the sea.
Excellent.
There's a local boat, the Monarch, that takes people for tours around the peninsula, and with just a little bit of luck, we'll get lots of seabirds, like Buller's albatross. We'll be able to see the cormorant nesting spots from the sea, which is pretty cool. Again, fur seals on the rocks. And with just a little bit of luck, we'll see Hector's dolphin.
Yeah. They're endangered, you say?
That's an endangered species, but it's a really cute little dolphin. It's, it's about the size of a dog.
Oh, wow.
Medium-sized dog. And they have these sort of dark, rounded fins. They're kind of... It's hard to describe, but it's like the dolphin version of a panda. They're really cute.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
Yeah. And usually, about 50% of the time they get them up around the boat on Monarch cruises. So with just a little bit of luck, we should get some great shots of them.
Excellent. So in the text that we put together, you have MV Monarch. What does MV stand for over there?
MV. I think that's a marine vessel.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, there's all these different designations for seagoing vessels.
Yeah, yeah. It's like HMS in the UK.
That's right.
Here in Japan, they have maru on the end of most boats. It's just a...
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the next day, what do we do the next day?
Next day, we'll leave Dunedin and drive down the Southern Scenic Route, which is a coastal road that takes us through past some coastal forest, which is stunning. We'll try to stop at some nice spots along the way through the forests. And we'll be stopping at a few little locations like the lighthouse at Nugget Point. And there are some really beautiful waterfalls up a few bush tracks. Not a terribly strenuous walk, maybe 15 minutes to reach these waterfalls, which are just stunning, and I'm sure they'll make for great pictures.
Yeah, that's just the right amount of exercise to keep some hotel staying photographers happy, I think.
That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to measure everything for the active but not sedentary photographer.
Yeah, sounds great. So let's see. On the fifth day, what are we doing on the fifth day?
Well, as we drive down through the Catlins district and that coastal forest, our destination is actually Bluff, which is a port town right at the very bottom of the South Island of New Zealand. Hmm. And from there, we're going to take a chartered boat across to Stewart Island.
Excellent.
So... that's going to be about an hour's journey. It's a very fast, very stable powered catamaran. It's actually a very, very nice boat. And yeah, that's going to take us to Stewart Island. Stewart Island is 85% Rakiura National Park. Now, Rakiura is the Maori word for land of glowing skies.
Ah, nice. Yeah, the photos are brilliant.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to get some really cool dawn and dusk pictures.
I'm sure that we will. And if we, if we don't, obviously we can't control the elements. But for people to name a place like that, it's obviously got a good chance that we'll see some spectacular skies. So let's keep our fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, The only main settlement on Stewart Island, Half Moon Bay, only has 300 permanent residents. It's another very small fishing village. The rest of the island is just covered in native bush.
Wow.
Forest.
Okay, sounds great.
We can see a bit of that from the boat, as well as staying in some nice digs on the island.
Sounds good. So what sort of wildlife are we going to see there? Obviously, we're looking forward to the skies and things. Is there much wildlife to see there?
Yeah, we don't have the sort of charismatic megafauna of Africa here in New Zealand. Our mammals are marine mammals. The only terrestrial mammal we have is actually a small bat. But we have an amazing diversity of bird life. So that's what we're going to capture on Stewart Island, or rather on Ulva Island, where we're going to visit on day five.
Okay.
That's a protected sanctuary. And we'll see just some beautiful species like the wood pigeon. There'll be flightless rails called weka, probably wandering up and down the beach. Hmm. Yellow and red-crowned parakeet. Lots of our fantastic forest species.
Nice. Very nice. So on day six, we've got some excitement for day six. What's happening there?
Oh, yeah. This is when we'll be very glad of our nice big stable boat. I have arranged for us to see our greatest predator, which is the great white shark. not a lot of people know this yet. It's not very well publicized, but this the boat that we're going on is one of the world's best operations from which to see great white sharks. We have very large animals off Stewart Island because we have a fairly large population of seals that they feed on. Mm. So we're going to get up pretty close to these sharks. Anyone who cares to can get in the shark cage, or rather the people cage, hop in the water and see these things. I just did it a couple of months ago, Martin, and I thought I would be, I thought it would be the marine equivalent of a bungee jump.
Yeah.
But I have to say it was more like viewing fine art. This incredibly serene feeling comes across you when you see these things. They're so graceful and large.
Yeah.
But I have to say, it's not a scary experience at all. It's just I think some people find it life-changing.
I think the scariest part of it, this for me would be actually taking my shirt off in public for the first time in a number of years. But I can totally, you know, from your image as well, you've got a shot here that we put up on the website. You can see that, you know, there's a couple of sharks in the scene, and it's just sort of the curve of the body as he comes around. I can't wait to see these firsthand.
They are, they're beautiful, beautiful animals. And you'll be surprised at how big they are. It's the girth of the white shark that really takes people by surprise.
Wow. So I think photography-wise here, obviously, I can't imagine people are going to want to bring a full DSLR housing and everything over with you. Obviously, you're welcome to if that's your thing. But I think that probably the thing to do here would be to have a compact camera with an underwater housing or one of the new compacts that you can actually just dunk into the sea.
Exactly.
Yeah, just something like that should be fine, you think?
I use a Canon G12 compact.
Yeah.
In with the underwater housing. Yeah. And it's ideal for that.
Yeah. I think that if people are, they really just don't, you know, obviously this is one thing. If you don't want to buy a new camera and a housing for this, do you think that there's an opportunity for people to like switch, just drop their own card into your camera, or is taking the housing off too much of a pain?
It wouldn't be impossible. It might be a bit difficult, but what we do on this boat is we can provide people with disposable underwater cameras anyway.
Okay.
You know, the little happy snapper things.
Yeah, yeah.
But if anyone wants to pop their card in my camera and borrow it, absolutely no problem.
I think I'll try and grab an underwater compact as well. So we'll make sure that we've got enough. Obviously, if you're going to go down there, it's one thing to experience these beautiful creatures, but it'd be great if you could take back some memories as well. So we'll try and make it possible for everybody to get at least a few snaps while you're down there.
Yeah, I think so. And there's you need no dive experience is necessary for this trip, Martin. You just need to be prepared to get wet.
Yeah.
All the gear is supplied, wetsuits, breathing apparatus. You're only about, your head's probably only a meter under the water off the back of the boat.
Got you.
So it's a very safe, stable platform. And those who don't care to get in the water, I completely understand. There are still great views of these animals from on deck.
Sounds great. Brilliant. Good stuff. So in the following morning, we go over to the Southland Museum, I see.
Yeah, we'll... the day we shark dive, we go back to the mainland. We stay the night in Invercargill. And next morning we'll get up and visit Southland Museum. They have a breeding colony of the tuatara.
What's that?
Which it's a lizard, but it's about the size of a house cat.
Oh, okay, cool.
But it predates the dinosaurs. It's a very ancient species of land reptile.
Wow.
They're quite quite primeval looking, and I've arranged with the museum for us to get a specimen out of the enclosure, and hopefully we'll get some nice close-up pictures of that in a you know, as natural a setting as we can make up. And I think, you know, people could get some nice trophy shots of these tuatara.
Excellent. That sounds brilliant.
And everywhere we go, I'll have stories to tell. Like Henry, the old tuatara that we'll probably be photographing, has a pretty interesting story of his own.
Well, let's save that for the tour itself.
Absolutely.
Okay, so on the next day, what do we do there?
Same day we see the tuatara, we'll look at them in the morning.
Okay.
We're going to hop back on our coach and make our way via the rest of the southern scenic route. Now, if you can envisage the map of New Zealand, we're travelling along the bottom end of the coast, heading sort of westish, northwestish up the coast, and we're heading to Te Anau.
Got you.
Lake Te Anau, which is in Fiordland, which is the wildest part of New Zealand. Beautiful native beach forest and some breathtaking mountain scenery.
Wow. Yeah. That's something something to look forward to. Well, it's all something to look forward to as well. It's just, I'm envisioning myself here that already, you know, there already, and it's just going to be so exciting.
Yeah, I'm getting excited just thinking about it again, Martin. We have plenty of scenic stops along the way, of course.
Yeah.
There are some great boulder beaches along the way. As we pass through a gap in the mountains on our way to Lake Tiano, in the afternoon, if the afternoon light is right on the Takatimus, it'll make some pretty spectacular shots. Great. And as we pass Lake Manapouri as well, just beautiful locations. And that night we'll be staying in a hotel in Lake Tiano.
Excellent. Great stuff. So what's next?
Next we are heading for World Heritage Site, Milford Sound. Frequently judged one of the world's top travel destinations. Anyone who knows much about New Zealand or New Zealand scenery will know the classic chocolate box picture of Milford Sound and Mitre Peak. Hmm. What a lot of people don't know is that the drive there is equally as spectacular as the destination. Hmm. We'll be stopping at a place called the Mirror Lakes, another place called the Chasm, where one of the sort of local rivers has drilled this enormous hole into the ground and drops through rock. It's pretty impressive. We'll be in, you know, again, primeval sort of almost rainforest. Not that it's that damp, but it's southern beach forest. Mm. Yeah, and of course we'll be going through the Homer Tunnel, it's several hundred meters long, quite a narrow rock tunnel, and it basically goes through the Southern Alps.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty spectacular. It's an amazing spot we'll be in. And yeah, once we're at the Sound, we're going to go cruising on the Sound.
Oh, yeah. Great stuff.
We'll cruise all the way out to the mouth of the Sound. There'll be bottlenose dolphins. To see on that trip. There'll be fur seals, and with a little bit of luck, we'll be seeing the Fiordland crested penguins on the rocks at the mouth of the Sound.
Great, yeah. So, as you can hear, you know, for the listeners, it's obviously we've got a lot of landscape opportunities, and it's all dappled with some amazing wildlife opportunities. So, it's really going to be such a photographic tour. We do have some cultural aspects as well that we'll get to shortly, but it's just going to be a really, really exciting trip to be on. So,
yeah, it will be. It's Milford Sound is not exactly a sort of bad tourist trap. It's very, very popular, but it's very popular for a very good reason. It's spectacular. It's you know, it's one of those sort of Yosemite type spectacular places.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can walk up to the base of the Sutherland Falls, which was recently named as one of these top 1,000 places to go. What else? I just cruising out through the Sound. Someone described it to me when I was in the boat, and it was perfect. Imagine a huge mountain range being gouged out just for you to walk through the middle of.
Uh-huh.
That's what it's like when you're in Milford Sound, when you're cruising. You're looking up, just about straight up at the sides of the mountains, which go up for several hundred meters, and it's sheer rock.
Wow.
And, you know, people are frequently amazed that the forest clings to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just an incredible place to be.
Wow. So exciting. I can't wait to get there. So, okay, let's what have we got next here?
Next, if that's not enough. Day 9, I think, is the next day. We've got, you know, we've had some good chances to photograph wild species, but I don't like leaving anything to chance with my photography, and I don't want to leave anything to chance for people on this trip. So on day 9, we're going to go to the Tiano Wildlife Center and get up really close to some of these native animals, the birds.
Great.
We've got a takahe, which is another flightless bird. It was actually thought to be extinct until it was rediscovered in 1948 by a deer hunter hunting in some very remote and rugged mountains. there's a recovery program for these birds. So they are kept at the Wildlife Centre, and we'll be able to get up close and photograph them. And they're kept in a pretty natural-looking tussock setting, so we'll get some pretty good pictures.
Great.
They also have some aviaries, and we'll be able to get in close to some of our other beautiful forest birds, like the tui, which is the parson bird. It's this kind of black bird with this sort of iridescent blue sheen to its feathers. And it has a little white ruff feather, hence the name parson bird.
Got you.
We've got Kia, which is a very large mountain parrot, which looks a little bit like a raptor. I think there's a couple of pictures on your page there of the Kia. It's got this beautiful flash of orange on the back and under the wings.
Yeah, there's a shot on the right there of one of them in flight, and it's a beautiful, a beautiful looking bird.
Oh, they are real characters, and I tell you, you don't want to leave any of your gear alone with a Kia, like a bag or a pair of boots, because they'll pick it to bits with that beak. They're very inquisitive, very intelligent birds.
That sounds like the Karakara that we had down in Antarctica in the Falklands, actually, I think it was. They are a raptor, and they're just all over the place. They're more like a crow than a, you know, the crows here in Tokyo can be pretty sort of vicious sometimes, but they're everywhere, and all over your stuff. So, and the Karakara are like that as well.
Streetwise birds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, the Kaka, Kia, it's a mountain parrot, but it's pretty streetwise. And we'll see them in the wild as we go through to Milford on the road. We'll probably stop and see some, but I just want to make absolutely sure that people get the best opportunities to photograph these animals, because you only come this way once.
Yeah, and that's the best thing to do. I mean, I think that there's obviously we've got weather, the risk with weather. We've got not a lot, but there's always risk with wildlife, and having this bit of insurance built in I think it's a really good idea. So great move.
Cool. From Tia now, we're off to Queenstown, which is a fairly well-known resort town here in the south.
Yeah.
It's on the shores of Lake Wakatipu at the foot of the Remarkable Mountains. Mm. And when we get there, everyone's going to find out why they're called that. We're in for a real treat in Queenstown, because we're staying just across the road from the lake shore in the Reese Hotel and Luxury Apartments, which are stunning.
Great stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be a really nice stay there. It's going to be autumn here in New Zealand, and that part of the country, there's a lot of introduced tree species such as poplars, which are going to be turning on their best colours for us.
Great stuff.
We're going to go from Queenstown. We're going to take a four-wheel drive journey to the very rugged, through the Skipper's Canyon. It's an old gold mining settlement, very isolated area, but it's going to be beautiful in all its autumn colours. Lots of sheer rock faces that we drive past, and we're going to take a jet boat ride up the Shotover River.
Nice.
Again, it's an amazing river to be on. A lot of the places that we're driving through, Martin, are actually locations from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me that. Yeah, that's so cool.
In fact, they're shooting The Hobbit in these locations right now.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. So they'll be out of the way. They'll be gone by the time we get there.
Yeah.
So we'll have it all to ourselves. But, the Skipper's Canyon trip is going to be pretty special.
Nice. That sounds good.
That evening, we're really packing it in, aren't we?
you have.
That I'm just reading it like this for the first time, and it's wow. That evening, we're going up a gondola up to the Skyline Restaurant in Queenstown. It's just overlooking Queenstown for a fantastic view of the lake. Hopefully, a really nice sunset on the peaks. But this is our cultural highlight. I'm arranging for a traditional Maori welcome ceremony.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this almost as much, if not more, than some of the wildlife opportunities. It's going to be amazing.
Well, it's going to be an interactive experience.
That's going to be fun too. So
yeah,
you know, just so that people know, if you're not, if it hasn't clicked what this is, if you've ever seen the All Blacks, the rugby team, in some of their international matches, the team actually gets there all facing to the opposite, the opponent team, and do this sort of a ceremony thing where they're sticking their tongues out, stamping their feet, and it's just. Every time I watch that, I mean, I actually get, I don't know what it is, but I actually get sort of almost emotional when I watch that. The hair on the back of my head stands up and everything. So it's going to be amazing to see someone actually do that, right up close and have the opportunity to actually photograph it as well. So I'm really looking forward to that.
How would I describe it? In a nutshell, it's a war dance, but it's so much, it has carries so much more meaning. Mm. It's actually a sign of respect. It's a challenge to an opposing party. Mm. But it's in a way that it's a sign of respect. For instance, people will do it. They'll do a spontaneous haka for a friend as a welcome or as a sign of respect at a graduation ceremony, for instance.
Wow.
It's a very fierce dance, and it can be very intimidating. But you're not only going to see one. I've arranged with our troop to give haka lessons, and you can participate in one.
I can't wait. I can't wait, really.
And that's all part of the much larger welcome ceremony. And my friends are going to tell us a little bit about Maori culture. It'll be really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is probably the cultural highlight, but one of the highlights of the tour, in my opinion.
Yeah. I tell you what, it'll be fun. It'll be fascinating and a lot of fun. I took a party there a few months ago, and they participated in the haka. Mm. And this is a bunch of gynecologists. and boy, they let loose. They were fierce.
Sounds great.
Yeah. It's gonna be cool.
Let's see, what have we got next?
Next day, we're literally going to paradise. That is a little place up at the very top of Lake Wakatipu. And we're going to see a little bit more of that Lord of the Rings type landscape. We'll have an opportunity to get into a little bit of the bush setting there and see if we can spot some forest birds in the wild.
Excellent.
There's an opportunity to just explore a little bit of the start of the world famous Rootburn Track, which is a sort of 3-day wilderness walk we have here, but we'll make sure that no one goes too far. Mm. There's also the option of taking a walk. It's about a 3-kilometer walk up a very nicely maintained wilderness track. Fairly flat, to a beautiful little place surrounded by bush called Lake Sylvan.
Nice.
It's a stunning little lake in the middle of this forest setting. And, even if you want to wander away from the lake, you'll find yourself among moss-covered boulders and this primeval, dense forest it's quite a challenge to compose, actually, in this dense forest. But I've seen some fantastic shots taken in there. It's beautiful.
Excellent. Good stuff.
It'll knock people's socks off.
Sounds good.
Then next day must be day 12. So that's our last day.
Yeah.
Last day in Queenstown. Again, for insurance purposes, I am arranging a visit to a local bird park.
Okay.
And that's our opportunity to see our national bird, the kiwi.
Yeah, and with the emphasis on C, right?
Yes, and unfortunately, it's a nocturnal species.
Yeah,
and so the birds aren't lit; they're in a very dark enclosure. It's light enough for us to see them, but flash photography is not on, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
they might, if you want to crank up your ISO all the way, you might get a shot. It might be a bit grainy, but flash photography is not allowed in the kiwi house.
So normal photography, if you don't use a flash, then it's okay.
I'm going to have to double check on that. I think normally they're not keen on people taking their cameras in there, but I'm going to see if I can twist their arm. I can't promise anything, but
no promises.
For a party of very special photographers, Martin, they might do us a favour.
Yeah, if we promise not to use flash or bang anything, start making a noise, hopefully they'll let us.
I mean, the problem is that the enclosure, we're probably, birds might be behind perspex anyway, because they're incredibly endangered. But it's pretty special just to see them. But the park also has 8 acres of natural setting where there are a lot of other native species for us to just enjoy the morning and see what we can get there.
Sounds great. So there'll be another bit of insurance there at the end.
Absolutely. Then there'll be a bit of time to pack and relax before the flight back to Auckland, which is included in our package.
Yeah. So we've covered the whole trip there, and it is going to be an amazing thing. It's going to be such a wonderful landscape and wildlife experience.
Not to mention the people, Martin.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the cultural side and the walk through the cities.
About us.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, obviously Clive and I are going to be sort of working with the team throughout the whole tour. The group will be, obviously, it's a photography tour, but also we're on hand all the time. We're both experienced photographers, and so we're going to be working with the group to ensure that if you've got any photography related questions or composition about your gear, just about anything. We are both Canon. Clive and I are both Canon shooters, but we've got a certain amount of experience with Nikon cameras. So, it doesn't matter what gear you shoot with yourself. Just if you're interested in these locations, we'll work with you in a workshop style fashion as well to make sure that you make the most of the opportunities that we're presented with, or that I should say Clive is going to present us with, because it really is an amazing itinerary that you've put together, Clive.
Oh, thanks, Martin. It's it's kind of come from the heart. These are all my favourite places in the world,
and it shows for sure. Yeah, you can certainly, you can tell that, and the way you talk about it as well. It's certainly something that you've put together with a lot of care. So the camera gear, just to quickly run through.
Yep.
You're probably going to want to have something, obviously we've got landscape and wildlife opportunities here, but it really depends. I think on the long end, well, let's start with, for the landscape, obviously, I mean, I like to use longer lenses on landscapes as well as wildlife, but you're going to want to get something wide. So maybe a 16 to 35 on the wide end would be good, or... I have a 14 millimeter lens that I like to make use of as well. That might be dropped into my bag. But on the long end, you're going to want at least 300 millimeters and hopefully a little bit longer to make the most of some of the wildlife opportunities.
I mean, the hooker sea lions and fur seals we'll get pretty close to. A 50 will be fine, or even a 28. But certainly, I wouldn't. A lot of the birds we're going to see are forest birds.
Yeah.
So 300 would be good. I'll be packing my 100 to 400.
Yeah.
I'll be pretty happy with that. It should be pretty well covered for everything. But if you want to bring a 600, bring it.
Yeah. So we've put notes to all of this on the website. We mentioned here. If you've got a 300, bring it. But if you've got a 1.4 times extender or teleconverter as well, drop that into your bag to give you a little bit of extra reach. If you do want to bring something longer, that's fine. But I think that you probably would be okay if you're covered up to around the 400 millimeter mark. So if you've got a 300 with a 1.4 extender, that takes you to 420, which is probably a good place to be. But if you're a bit of a pack horse and you feel as though you can handle bringing your longer lenses, then they certainly won't go to waste.
And your flashes.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to leave stuff behind, but inevitably, my pack weighs about 15 kilos.
Oh, right. So what do you use? Do you use a like a better beamer or anything like that, or do you need a flash, do you think, Clive?
No. Just about everything we're going to be doing is in daylight. Some of the forest stuff will be, low light, but generally we're out during the day. Most of the birds are in sort of open forest. If people like flash photography, then certainly bring your flashes. I never go. I can't leave the house without two flashes and some wireless triggers. That's just me.
And that's just for a shopping trip.
That's just shopping. Yeah. But I would also say, if don't be intimidated if you're not an SLR shooter either. You're going to have a great time if you just like to shoot with a compact. There's no day where you'll be missing out if all you've got's a compact, because it's everywhere we go is a mixture of landscape and wildlife, so there's going to be something for everyone in this trip.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily need to be a total photography sort of geek out. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to such beautiful places. I mean, like I said, my brother loved New Zealand, and it wasn't because of photography. He was a soldier down there, but he just found the scenery to be so beautiful that he wanted to live there. And so, it's I totally agree. You don't necessarily have to be full on photography to really enjoy it. And even if you are doing it only with a compact, you'll still have a great time.
But anyone can come on this trip and enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to learning stuff from the people who come on this trip.
Oh, yeah, you
Every
always.
time I get together with photographers, I learn something new from them.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So, clothing wise, it's going to be relatively mild during the day, you tell me. But there's, we're still going to need to wrap up a little bit, especially if it gets a bit windy, or the early morning evenings.
We've got no dangerous animals at all in New Zealand, but our weather is what kills people out here. Not that it's going to be that bad when we're touring, but the weather in New Zealand is notoriously changeable. So you can be thinking, great, I'm going to get out in my shorts and my t-shirt today, and I'm not lying, within half an hour, it could be snowing. It's just we've got a very unpredictable climate, which sort of makes more fun. But just make sure you've got good waterproof gear and a fleece or two, and you're ready for a little taste of winter should it appear. I always like to go out with a pair of waterproof over trousers. We're never going to be far from a bus or shelter, so you don't need full-on Gore-Tex jungle wet weather gear, but a good waterproof shell, a hat. We'll be out on the Southern Ocean for a day or two, so if the breeze gets up, you'll definitely want to rug up. So yeah, be prepared for that.
And
Good
maybe,
sensible shoes.
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Some, maybe not necessarily hiking boots, but something with a good sole, maybe a Vibram sole or something like that on there to give you a bit of grip as we go on some of the short sort of walks that we'll be doing as well. So yeah, sensible shoes, good way to put it.
And of course, tripod.
Oh yeah, don't forget the tripod. So yeah, all of this stuff is covered on the website. So like I say, it's mbp.ac and then slash NZ2012 will take you over to the page. And it's just, or if you just go, it's linked to the top page on my mbpworkshops.com website. So there's lots of other details on there, so really what we want to do here now is just tell you that the cost of the tour, obviously this is important, it's 7,600 New Zealand dollars. And it's to book on the tour, all you need to do is go down to the bottom of the page and pay a deposit of 700 New Zealand dollars. And what that will do is it'll put you on the list, and I'll immediately let you know that I'll confirm that we've still got spots left. And I will update the page if we run out of places. But ideally right now, what we need to know is how many people are on board. And we really need to know that no later than February the 10th. Basically, before I run off to do my Hokkaido tours, if we haven't reached the minimum number of 15 people to make this go ahead, then I'm going to end up having to refund the deposits that people have paid to book. If the tour should not go ahead, then you will be refunded your deposit 100%. There's no questions asked there. But really, what I want to do is if you're interested and you want to join Clive and I over in New Zealand for really the photography adventure of a lifetime, then get your ducks in line and drop us this deposit so that we can see that you're committed to join us, and we will just we'll try to hit the minimum number of 15 so that we can make it happen. And really, it's going to be amazing. So do try to sort of get those ducks in line and I guess that's my Nottingham accent duck. So it's not D-O-C-K, it's D-U-C-K. But yeah, really, I'd love to see any of the MBP community over in New Zealand with Clive for a really, really fun couple of weeks. So Clive, let's see. Where can people find you online? You're on Twitter, right?
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle's just my name, Clive Copeman.
No space or underbars or anything like that, right?
Nope, that's it. That's simple. And I've got my own photography site, clivecopemanphotography.com.
Okay. So I'll drop a link to that site and to Clive's Twitter feed into the show notes for this episode as well. I'll also embed some images into a blog post, but the main page is the NZ2012 over at mbp.ac, and there'll also be you can listen to this online at mbp.ac/312 for episode 312. So really, hope that we get to see a bunch of you over in New Zealand next year. And thanks for your time today to explain all of this to us, Clive, /312 for episode 312. So really, hope that we get to see a bunch of you over in New Zealand next year. And thanks for your time today to explain all of this to us, Clive. It's been great listening to you walk us through this. And I really hope that we get a chance to work together, and make this happen in April next year.
Yeah, well, it's been my pleasure, Martin, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you out here. I think we'll have a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Clive. I'll speak to you again later.
Cheerio, mate.
So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc., and all links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great